first of all, I wouldn't encourage just anyone to become a conscious objector, because if you don't know it already, conscious objector status is the most difficult way to get out of the Army. Mine took 18 months, and it was a hard 18 months. So if someone's just looking to leave the military, conscious objector status is not the way to do it. And you should only do it if you feel absolute moral conviction that you can't participate. And the other thing I would stress is that to go online and look up CO packets that have been successful, go and read through a couple entire packets that show what it takes to become a successful CO. And don't ever be intimidated by the Army, and don't let them tell you the regulations. You have to go and read the regulation on conscious objection yourself and look at some of the successful packets to get an impression of how wide the field is and how you can go about it.
And Aidan, your book ends as you're about to give your first presentation to a group at New College in Sarasota. Some members of your company were there. Can you describe how that presentation went and how they reacted?
Yeah. Although the book ends, you know, clearly my story doesn't. And I was terrified of their reaction, of how the guys in my unit would respond. But I just went ahead and I gave the presentation I was planning to as if they weren't there. And afterwards, I showed the photograph of the guy with the spoon scooping out the Iraqi's brains, and that guy was there. And afterwards, in the sort of press of people shaking my hand, the three of them came up to me, clapped me on the back, shook my hand, they said, good job, and they all walked out without any confrontation. And I was really touched by that, and I was pleased, because I thought it either meant that they respected my difference of opinion, or that they acknowledged that maybe some of the things that had happened in Iraq weren't right and weren't justified, and now that they could look back on it with a clear head, not in the moment, then they could begin to rethink their own behavior and the behavior of others in our unit. So I was really pleased with that, and it gave me a lot of courage to go forward, knowing that the guys in my unit, although they may disagree with me, didn't violently oppose me and certainly didn't begrudge me my right to speak and to have my own opinion.
And was that the last that you heard from them, or have they disrupted you any further?
No, absolutely not. I've run into several members of my company at different presentations around the Tampa Bay area. Sometimes they've disagreed with me, and usually they'll say something like, well, I agree with 75% of what you said, or I agree with 80% of what you said, but. And then they'll offer a different interpretation. Usually it has to do with Abu Ghraib and the treatment of prisoners, and they'll often talk about how the prisoners were bad people, and thus they had to treat them that way and so forth, which, you know, I don't mind that. I think ideological differences are great. It makes us all stronger. And I've never had an ugly confrontation. I've never had any name-calling or any rude behavior. And, in fact, some of the members of my unit, I run into them and they say, hey, you know, we're sorry for what happened in Iraq. You know, we're sorry for the way we treated you. And I see your point of view now. And, in fact, I went out and had lunch with one of the guys that I nearly got into a fight with in Iraq. And we reconciled now that we could look back on it, separated from the passion and with a little distance, we could be friends again. And that gave me so much hope for the future.
Your objection to war is based on Buddhism. Can you describe that for our listeners?
Yeah, I became a Buddhist after I enlisted in the Army, but I wasn't a very serious Buddhist for a long time until after I'd completed my advanced training, and I became progressively stronger as a Buddhist as I experienced more of the war. And essentially my objection was twofold. First of all, Buddhism absolutely forbids killing, and the first precept of Buddhism, kind of the first commandment, if you will, is do not take life, do not kill others. And I had this sensation of the awesome responsibility of taking a life. When you take someone's life, or you take anything's life, you're removing all their choices for the rest of what would have been their lifetime, all their chances for future happiness, all their chances to grow, all their chances to change other people's lives, and the whole ripple effect of their life stops right there with you. And that is such an awe-inspiring power that you have to kill someone else, that I feel like a human being can't make that decision. They don't have the kind of foresight and moral clarity that it takes to make a decision like that. Well, I'm killing this person for the greater good. But who are we to say? And I think it's just an absolute hubris, and it's an arrogant act to think that we can predict the outcome of such a tremendous decision that impacts so many other people. So I just reject that. I reject that as a moral choice.
Aidan, those are the only questions I had. Is there anything else our listeners should know?
Well, yeah, I want to say one more thing about the book, about the Sutras of Abu Ghraib. When I wrote the Sutras of Abu Ghraib, in my mind I was reacting against a lot of the war literature that was out there. Books like Black Hawk Down and The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell and a lot of the older war novels, in that I think too much of the war novels are really a kind of hero worship in disguise. and they tell the story of violent actions and real physical bravery and daring. And I think that's great, and I think that story needs to be told. However, I think there's a huge gap, and I don't think we should read only one kind of war story. And I'm proud to say that my war story is not about violence, although there's violence in it. And it's not about war exploits, although those are in it too. It's kind of about the moral side of war and the moral journey and the development, which I think is something that will resonate with a lot more readers. I'm not interested really in having, you know, a heroic soldier with the American flag waving gently in the background, and I'm not really trying to entertain people or satisfy their ghoulish curiosity about war. I really want people to think about the other side, the personal side, that hasn't been reflected in all these gory, violent war memoirs. So my idea was to create a different kind of war novel that talks about the shades of gray, not the uncompromising black and white, good and evil. To talk about all the moral quandaries and the moral decisions that you have to make as a soldier.